This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break here this week from our usual magic serial, and we're going to speak with John Armstrong. John is a close-up Magician of the Year winner from the Academy of Magical Arts, as well as being the cover boy on the February issue of Magic Magazine. And he came to Houston recently to lecture for our IBM ring here locally and gave a fantastic lecture, despite the fact that he was feeling a little bit sick. He was kind of under the weather, and he still delivered a powerhouse lecture, which we all got a lot out of and really enjoyed. It was great to spend some time with John. This week's episode is brought to you again here by our sponsor, ManageGigs.com. This is one way that you can keep up with all of your gigs online without having to resort to any spreadsheets. It's almost like having your own personal assistant to help manage all of your activities online from any place at any computer that has internet access in the world. It's a great thing. And aside from that, we have another special announcement we're going to talk about towards the end of this podcast. And I think that you would probably want to stay tuned for that because you have an opportunity to win something very cool. Very cool. Well, let me turn this over here to John Armstrong and let him talk a little bit about magic and comic books. There is an interesting correlation between the two, and I think that you'll get a lot out of listening to this podcast, not only as it relates to comic books. Even if you're not a comic book aficionado, there are certainly a lot of other performing tips and business tips that John gives along the way that are extremely important to any magician, whether that you are just getting started or you're a seasoned pro. We had this conversation following the eve of his lecture, and as mentioned that he was not up to snuff, he wasn't feeling all that great, and we had gone out to lunch and then went to find a relatively quiet corner. We went over to a bookstore, to the coffee shop, and I set up the microphone and we chatted a little bit. It was kind of like I felt like we were talking in the library in a way, because there were other people who were working on computers around us and trying to read books or whatnot. And you can hear in the background the barista who was mixing some coffee and everything, but I don't think we disturbed them. They didn't seem to mind at all. I think you will enjoy the podcast here this week with John Armstrong here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me today as my guest Mr. John Armstrong. Hi there, John.
Hello.
Hello. I'm glad to have you here. You're actually passing through Houston right now for a lecture tour that you're on.
This is true. Last night I did a lecture, if you could call it that.
One of the best days of your life, wasn't it?
It was an amazing day. I'm sick. Have quite the cold. I was supposed to get in around 2 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, but instead my flight was, because of mechanical delays, was keep pushing back. My plan was to go sleep up, cold medicine up, then go and do the lecture. I did not get in until basically the time of the lecture start, and then I was supposed to rent a car, and they wouldn't rent me a car because everywhere else it seems are fine with the fact that I have a certificate saying that my license is renewed, but I don't actually have the renewed license because it's back home, because I got it when I was back on tour. And so then I had to take an Uber here and then just basically cough my way through my diseased-filled lecture.
Abbreviated
full
lecture.
Of germs. And
some
magic, but mostly germs.
The germs had a field day.
Yeah, lots of
yes.
germs.
And even though it was abbreviated, you really hit on all the cogent parts, I thought, you know, the lecture, as far as, you know, what you're known for. You're the tiny plunger guy.
Yes.
You know.
That's exactly what I want on my tombstone.
You're the tiny plunger guy.
Here lies tiny plunger guy.
So you're going to live in a tiny house?
A tiny house.
And do you have a tiny toilet at home? Or do you get, like, these kinds of weird...
No.
Okay. I might collect
this. I do not do that. Though someone actually did buy me a tiny, like a little tiny toilet. And I have one of my original tiny plungers in it. Just as a funny gag on my shelf. But I would never use it in the act or anything.
Yeah.
Just funny.
A funny thing. I know I thought maybe that you might collect tiny things or something or whatever.
No. This is not some sort of weird miniature fetish. I'm using one little bit. That's it.
All right. Well, getting into the tiny
plunger, I would like to ask, you had mentioned in your lecture about how that came about.
Right.
And I want to get into comics, because I know that it seems like that there are a lot of magicians who are interested in comics and going to Comic-Con and everything like that.
Sure.
In particular, like that, I know that Eric DeCamps likes Batman, and Simon Lovell, you know, likes Batman. There are a lot of really cool guys and great magicians like yourself who are interested in superheroes
comics, yeah.
like that. Yeah. And you had gotten that tiny plunger at a Comic-Con.
Yeah,
so
I did.
Kind of got two different directions to go here. We'll explore both of them. But
sure.
So you were at a Comic-Con.
Yes, I was at WonderCon, which is a con I go to when I can. I've actually been going to it. They've moved it like three different places, all in Southern California for the most part. And then I was there, and I was at an anime table, you know, anime, Japanese animation stuff.
Right.
When it's print, it's called manga. When it's animated, it's anime.
I did not know that. That's the difference. I thought they were both interchangeable.
Yeah, no. So print is manga. Manga is the print version of, and actually, Japanese art illustration and sequential art is what it's really called. It's an amazing form. It's beautiful stuff and stuff that magicians really.
How does that differ from graphic art?
Oh, well, graphic novels and graphic art. Graphic art is usually referring to anything that's like logos and signage.
Oh, that's
and
true.
Of that nature.
Yeah, but graphic novels.
But graphic novels. The person who coined that is a gentleman by the name of Will Eisner, and Will Eisner. Sort of like the godfather of sort of what we consider to be the modern adaptation of the comics form. Because if you really look at it, comics in some form or another is pretty old. You really can say like Egyptians, hieroglyphics and things of that nature.
Would be considered as comics?
Yeah, you would be considered because it's pictographs.
So it was just a joke when the guys really had the cups and balls. He was just joking. That was his cartoon.
Yeah,
it was a comic.
A cartoon. He was describing it. So, you know, there's a lot of history back in through the whole sort of, you know, the feeling of comics in central. But basically it's an American art form, and then the Japanese discovered it and did some amazing work with it as far as like emotions and being able to emulate emotions on the page. And one of the, getting kind of wrapping this back a little bit to magic here, one of the books I think all magicians should read is Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. Mm-hmm. Scott McCloud wrote a book about understanding art and especially about understanding the graphic form of comics. But if you take out the word comics and put in the word magic, I think you have the best magic theory book ever written because of just how it's supposed to make people feel. I mean, think about it. It's a maligned art form that is normally referred to as something that's just for children.
Mm-hmm.
Comics and magic have this really sort of great, sort of kinship to each other. And they're really great mediums for invoking emotions and for telling stories. And unfortunately, most people don't realize that. They think of it as just like, you know, oh, it's just a cheap thing for kids.
Cute thing for kids, right?
Right. So in both art forms have those exact same feelings about them. And you can do some really, really great things with magic. You can do some really, really great things with a graphic form. I mean, when people think comics, they immediately go to superheroes because that was the predominant type of American comics was superhero comics.
Mm-hmm.
But in Japan, going back to manga, all types of stories were told in that way.
Graphic way.
So romance stories, Western stories, space stories, you know, all different types of stories were all told in that way. And yes, there was definitely stuff like that happening in the United States, but it's only in the last, I think, 20 years that the graphic novel form has been used. And people become more widely accepted to tell stories that have nothing to do with capes and tights and saving the day. And I think magic, once again, is going through that same renaissance where people are actually respecting it a lot differently, looking at it and saying, oh, this is a good thing. You can do interesting things with it. And there's been people who've been pioneers in the art, the same way in comics, in this case in magic, that have been able to like pull people out of that perception that magic is top hats and canes and bunnies and things like that.
Right.
And it's just something that is that can be used, again, to invoke emotions, and really tell stories. And Blaine I think, probably one of the first people who really sort of put that into a national spotlight.
David Blaine,
yeah. David Blaine did a really good job of that. And I think that's been continued by a lot of sort of the people who sort of followed him and that sort of street magic.
It's kind of interesting
thing.
Also, though, that the traditional way that a magician has been depicted in comics and in a lot of movies and everything else is being kind of a dastardly kind of a villain.
Sure. Well, I mean, I maintain that the first real superhero was Mandrake the Magician.
Okay.
Like, there's people who I've gotten into with comic scholars. I get into big, huge arguments with them. Because everyone usually refers to Superman being the first actual superhero. Superman was the first superhero. Secret Identity.
Mm-hmm. He had it all. X-ray vision.
Origin powers, things of that nature. The things that usually accompany him. But Mandrake pretty much was the same thing, except for the fact he didn't have a secret identity. He was just always Mandrake the Magician.
Mm-hmm.
But he had powers.
That's what he did. Well, did he have powers, or was he
did. He had magic powers. He could...
Kind of like Harry Potter.
But his thing was, like, he made people see visions and things of that nature.
Okay.
Like, he made people see illusions that weren't really there, which was very close to the Walter Gibson thing, the shadow, which was
the
radio stuff, who Walter Gibson being a magician.
Right.
But it's very interesting stuff, like, to me, like, the parallels between the two art forms. That's really where it comes from.
And it all really, in my opinion, came together with Steranko. I mean, talk about a guy.
Steranko was, if you really think about it, Steranko could not have done what he did to the comics form. And again, in comics, he's a rock star. Rock star.
Yeah.
He really wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for the fact that he was a magician, that he thinks like a magician.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he was using perspective in ways that had never been done before. Mm-hmm. He was using angles in ways that had never been done before. Changing where the camera was. The camera, basically, the viewpoint of the viewer.
The viewer, sure.
The viewer. The camera to different angles that had not been done before. The Kirby style.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
It was amazing stuff. But it was very straightforward. It was like, here's a character, here's another character, character does this, character does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking at him, like, for the shots that you would normally think of, right? But him and a few other really, really smart artists were... it's not Kirby. Steranko and a lot of really smart artists were... playing with the form, like changing where the viewpoint was and looking at it from different perspectives and using optical illusions and perspective in ways that I hadn't been done before. And I think that's definitely a magician's thinking, in this case applied directly to art. So he's probably the best, because he was a magician, wrote some amazing card magic and escapes. He was an escapologist. And then took those ideas and brought them to comics. And a lot of times when I talk about this stuff, because I talk about this at comic book conventions, I talk about how we
all... You lecture at some of these
conventions? Yeah, I not really lecture. I mean, I give talks and panel talks and things like that. I talk about comics' influence on other things besides general pop culture.
What is your specialty? I mean, what is it that you...
I'm talking about magic. I talk about how magic... Okay. comics' influence on magic and where I think hopefully magic can be influenced. Magic can be an influence on comics. And Steranko is the person I talk about the most. And I've got to meet the man. He's amazing. I mean, he is everything that you want out of just the legendary figure. I mean, he's incredible.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Mark D'Souza told me that he's a great guy, and he plays the guitar, I guess.
Yeah,
musically inclined as well. He's kind of a Renaissance man.
He does everything. He's a man's man. Like, that guy is awesome.
I've got a signed photo, or signed poster, actually, with him and Walter Gibson. At home and hanging.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was the man. So I spent, like, a lot of my time at comic book conventions when I'm talking about this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with other sort of pop culture historians, and because that's what I'm really, really into, because I think there's a lot to learn as a magician, as somebody who travels and does this for a living, to understand the zeitgeist of what people are looking for. Again, like, in pop culture is the reason why.
Sure.
And then take those ideas, whether they're from the past or present or where the future trends are going, and apply them to the kind of performing that I'm doing, so that I am always relative. I mean, not relative. Current. I'm always current. I'm always interesting. I'm being able to engage different people from different eras, different age groups, different backgrounds, so that I can relate to them on a different level, so that they were more interested in what I'm doing. Magic-wise.
Right. where do you see that? You talk about seeing into the future, or what the trends, what are the trends currently, let's say, with comics as it relates to magic, and where do you think that's going to be going? I mentioned a moment ago about a lot of times the magicians are depicted as being villains. However, that was it one of the X-Men, I think, that's the gambler, or whatever is his name, that is from New Orleans? I know
It's Gambit.
Gambit, not, yes. Yeah. That he's is kind of a good guy, I think, isn't he?
Right, but he's not really a magician as much as he just takes cards. He likes to use decks of cards.
Mm-hmm.
His power is that he can put large amounts of energy into something and throw it as a sort of a, as a, like, an energy weapon.
Okay.
For lack of a better term. And so so he uses cards and he throws cards at people.
But is he considered a good guy?
Oh, yeah, he's Gambit. He's the best.
That's what I was thinking. Michael Darnot loves him.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Was I correct? Is he an X-Man?
Yeah, he's an X-Man.
Okay.
He's a mutant.
So as far as trends going, I was interrupting.
Well, I mean, I think the trend as far as pop culture goes is that superheroes are becoming more and more and more accepted as mainstream entertainment.
Well, yeah, well, look at the Avengers. I mean, the popularity of their series.
Not just the Avengers. I think that's a really good example of the beginning, but I think even more so, you have these TV shows like Arrow and Flash and Supergirl that are like, you know, these are
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But they're basically just soap operas.
They're
comic books of Shelley over them.
And then speaking of which, I like that, you know, in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., in which they actually tie that in to the Avengers, so when something happens, that it happens in the movie, and they refer to it back in the series and vice versa.
Yeah, which is really, really great stuff. And Agent Carter and that.
Yeah, and Agent Carter, too.
And then on Netflix, they've been doing these shows, these Marvel shows. Speaking of things that
Daredevil was awesome.
Daredevil was great. Jessica Jones, which are very dark shows. Jessica Jones especially was a very dark, very sort of moody show.
Yet.
Really, really great. You should definitely check it out. And moody shows, but shows about like deeper things. And Jessica Jones, for example, is really about, I mean, essentially surviving rape, of all things.
Yeah.
It's a superhero show about surviving basically someone that gave you the ultimate violation.
But something that happens in real life and culture that kind of bring that in, so it's not something that's just out there that you don't believe, because it could happen to someone you know.
Or so it feels very real. So using that as metaphors, you can see where that magic can kind of play into that. I've been talking for years about really defining who you are as a superhero by the powers you do, by not only what you can do, but what you can't do.
Okay.
You know, I think what was interesting about the X-Men or different other superhero teams is what their power sets are and what they can't do and why they need other people to then help them, because they can't – this guy can run fast, but that's it. And this guy can – you know, he can shoot bolts, but he can't do anything else. And so figuring out how to become a very, very distinct, very easily rememberable character by not only what magic effects that you're able to demonstrate, but what you can't do. I think we need to show that vulnerability.
You mean your limitations?
Yeah, your limitations.
Okay.
We need to show our vulnerability. I think if we can constantly putting ourselves up there, like, here's what I can do. I can do this. I can do that.
As a magician, you're referring to
right,
now?
Right, exactly, a magician. I can do everything. I can do everything.
Are you talking about like bar mitzvahs, birthday parties, corporate trade
shows?
No. Or do you mean like close up and stage?
I'm not talking about like.
But you have powers to do everything.
Yeah, I'm
as a magician.
Like, okay. I can read minds. I can levitate this. I can find your card. I can escape out of the straitjacket. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
You become this huge like hodgepodge of powers. And that's very unrelatable. It's very unrelatable.
Well, Superman was able to name any power, and he had them all.
Kind of, but at the same time, he did have vulnerabilities, so
kryptonite
magic.
Okay.
Then also, what it was really his biggest vulnerability, and the smart writers, was that he was just always good. He was always going to go on the side of good. He was always going to do them the right thing, what he felt was the right thing.
Right.
And technically, you could use that against him. That's why Batman was able to defeat him in certain times. He was always going to go for the side of good.
I'm anxious to see that new movie coming out with Superman versus Batman.
Yeah. I am too. Yeah. I'm actually more anxious for Suicide Squad. I think that looks really good. But I think but Superman is a very hard character to write. Ask any comic book writer about writing superheroes. Superman is super hard to write. Why? Because he can be very unrelatable because he is so powerful. The most relatable character to the average person, and why he sort of resonates with people, is Spider-Man, because he had these great powers, but he also had
some issues.
Yeah, he had issues. He was a kid, and he had to like deal with all this other stuff. And he becomes very, very relatable to the person who's reading it, and that is what I'm saying. Like, allow yourself to seem more human, even when you're demonstrating the fact that you can do this, and be very, very careful about the effects that you select. So that when people think about what you're able to do, they're thinking about you, your personality, and then all the magic you do strengthens your character and actually builds you up and makes you a very memorable, well-rounded person and, you know, character, as opposed to just a guy that can do a bunch of stuff.
Right. Yeah, you want to be relatable, but also being able to almost what they say would be to laugh at yourself. I mean, to recognize that this is something that it's like, huh, look at this, you know, look what I can do. Not like, hey, I just fooled you, I'm cool, you're an idiot kind
of
thing.
Well, the laughing at yourself is part of it, but it's more about like actually looking at the selecting what you can do and what you can't do to prove it. It's like, for example, like I personally, I do a lot of, I do card magic.
You said, like, right? You said last night, what, 95% of what you
95% of it is card magic. Yeah. But I personally wouldn't be able to take, even though it's a card, technically it could be a card trick, I wouldn't be able to take that card and make it float around me. I wouldn't do the Hummer card. Because that seems like a power set that I do not have.
You know, I've talked with Bob Cassidy about this very thing, and that's the importance of mentalism, and I think it certainly transcends the magic, that is to know what your powers are so it's clear. In other words, are you clairvoyant? Are you a psychic? Are you a mind reader? You know, what is it? And the same thing like with a magician, then to know within your limitations of what your powers are and to be able to present that well. And I like, for an example, last night where you were saying that you shouldn't be using the universal sign for pick a card, any card, by spreading it. Just hand them the deck of cards and you have them take out a deck of cards. I do that frequently, and I hadn't thought about that, but that really is one thing of saying, well, this is more organic. This is the way of actually doing things, and so that it would seem out of your nature if after doing certain things and creating these little pictures that you do, to have something that's a little bit messy. It's almost like whenever you're talking fast and then all of a sudden slow down, or that you make a quick motion in your, as you're starting to do some slice. Like, oh, I don't know what he did, but he did something right there because, you know, something changed in the tempo. So to recognize, I think, what your powers are is extremely important.
Yeah, especially mentalism, because I think if you are, look, people differ on both sides of this as far as, like, whether you should disclaim whether it's real or not.
Sure.
But not to get into that debate, but the idea, right, that if you come off where you can just, like, do everything, I don't feel like I think that's less strong than being really, really good at, you know, clairvoyance. Mm-hmm. Or really, really, really good at, sort of like, you know, if you do a Q&A act, that should be the only thing you do. Like, just basically Q&A. Mm-hmm. You know, then you should also be a metal bender. You shouldn't also be doing other things like that. I think, whatever call it, Swiss Army mentalists, right? Where everyone's just doing everything. Uh-huh. He's right. He's like, you shouldn't, that's not, the way to go about it. You have to, like, I think pick a power set. You know, maybe a couple things, but definitely a power set that you do, and then mine that to make it believable. And it's the same thing with magic. I think for some reason, mentalists think much more about that, and magicians don't. Magicians think, well, this is a great trick. I saw this on Penguin Live. It looks great. I'll do that.
Right.
This is a really good thing. I saw on Fury 11. I'll do that. And so
it's a mishmash of
powers. And this all comes back from the time I saw years ago. I saw a show at the castle where a guy did. And I'm not joking, a Q&A act, two coin tricks, and an escape jacket. And I'm like, how the hell is this related to each other?
Yeah.
This makes no sense. If not only is it the weirdest power set in the world, it said nothing about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
you need to learn about the performer.
Yeah.
I think it's a journey that a performer has to take, is to let people in to see a little bit of your personality. Even if it's a fake personality, it is within the scope of that act to have created that personality.
But my point, the point I'm trying to make, though, Scott, is that the personality and the effects are not separate. It's not, here's my personality,
and here's
some tricks that I can do.
Yeah.
The tricks that you do should support your personality.
Precisely.
And the personality should support the effects that you're doing. Everything needs to be together. I'm also a big, like, I hate people say, well, magic's all about the entertaining. Mm-hmm. No. Magic's all about doing magic. If it says magician on your card, you need to be able to fool people and do magic and
like
be very impressive.
You'd say mystery. Right.
It's got to be impressive. Same time, magic shouldn't all be about magic.
Mm-hmm.
Magic shouldn't just be about fooling people. It should be about entertaining people. But they need to be together at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is really, really good at sleights. He is very, very does really, really amazing effects that look beautiful. But he's very boring. Don't be that guy, and also don't be the guy that's funny, 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 haha, prop comedy, but his magic is very, very weak.
Mm-hmm.
So take those two things, build them together, and be really, really, really entertaining, really engaging. Whether it's in a comedy or a dramatic or in a personal level, be incredibly, incredibly engaging and be really, really, really magical.
What you're talking about is non-dual thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, everything should be related to everything else.
Right.
It's holistic.
But there are people who are successful in both. Let's say, for example, Amazing Jonathan, where he tears a bill up and he can't put it back together and just wraps tape around it and hands the guy. But
right,
he
but
has got 40
comic.
Minutes.
That's okay. A parody of a comic, magic act. That's a completely different thing.
Okay.
No one walks into that show and thinks, okay, I'm going to go see the most amazing magician.
Yeah.
No. He's doing a parody of a magic act.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't say the same thing about Valentine. Valentine did a parody of a magic act. They're really, really great acts. They're funny, engaging acts. But no one walked out of there saying, wow, I saw the world's greatest magician.
That's a very good point.
No, they saw magic.
Or they don't go to see Copperfield and say, man, was he a great comedian?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that layman, and this is happens all the time, layman will be so, they're like, oh, I didn't realize you were so funny. You're a comedian too. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, like these things are so completely separate. True story. I was in Australia. I did a lecture, and my lecture is funny. I mean, but I'm being very very I think passionate about what I'm teaching, and showing my thoughts, my theories behind all this stuff. And a guy comes up to me afterwards, and I'm doing a show the next day, like for the public, but the magicians were invited as well. And I'm doing a show, and a guy comes up to me, and he's really has a look of concern on his face, like actual genuine concern.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I bought tickets for the show yesterday for my whole family, for show tomorrow, for the whole family. And I'm a little, I didn't know it was all going to be just all cards like this. I feel like, and I'm like, well, I guarantee you it'll be a good time. They'll all have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I go, he's like, are you sure? Are you sure? And I said, tell you what, I have in my pocket the amount of your tickets.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can instantly give that to you.
Yeah.
You come up to me after the show, and if you did not like the show, if you didn't enjoy the show, I will hand you the money. I'll just give you the money,
mm-hmm.
and we'll call it so fair. And he goes, okay, fine. But I don't know. I'm very
skeptical.
I just don't understand. So I go in the next day and I do my show, and without padding, my one man show is called "I Do Card Tricks and I'm Funny," and I feel I do both. And so
that's a long title.
I do card tricks and I'm funny. That's the name of my one man show. And I do one man show, and I'm very funny, and people I do card tricks, and so I. People walking out, I'm doing signing the things, selling my merch and stuff.
Right.
And he comes up to me and I said, well, do I owe you money? And he goes, no, but you cheated. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you didn't tell me you were going to be funny. Like, it was like
in the title?
Yeah, I'm like,
it's what does that poster say?
Exactly, it's in the title. He didn't tell me you were going to be funny. And I'm like, well, one, it's in the title. And two, I mean, I am funny. He goes, I don't think you could be funny and do card tricks. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, I guess not. I mean,
but I'm proving you wrong.
I mean, I'm not the first to prove you wrong. I mean, Bill Malone and Tom
Michael
Mulica.
Finney.
Michael Finney. Tom Mulica. Tom Mulica did most of that. He's a member for the cigarette stuff, but most of that act was cards.
That's true.
That's cards.
Yeah.
He did 45 minutes of a deck of cards, then 15 with the cigarettes.
Foolery, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what he did. And so, like, it's... You can do this stuff. You can be really incredibly engaging and interesting with a deck of cards without having it to be constantly pick a card and being boring. And that's what I'm trying to say is like, it's all holistic.
Mm-hmm.
It all goes back to these great sort of writers, just tying it back up to comics, these great writers who understood that what the difference between regular, I guess, sort of like standard prose, normal writing, mm-hmm. and comics book writing is you're a director. If you read a book, and you read this book and you are free to imagine what the scene looks like in
mm-hmm.
your head.
Mm-hmm.
And you're free to then describe in there, even though you're just getting a character description, what that character actually looks like, or what that character's doing, or how he's dressed and things like that. You're free to do that in your own mind. Which is why when, then you see the movie and it's based on the book, it's never exactly the way you pictured it in your head.
Right. Which is like whenever I saw Harry Potter, that you could never unsee the picture you had from reading the book, or any book for that matter. You know, James Patterson, you see the character on the screen and suddenly it becomes Tom Cruise or whoever that it is from then on. So,
but in comics, the author is able to then control all of that. He's mm-hmm. able to tell the artist exactly what he wants him to draw.
That's true.
How he wants him to look, mm-hmm. how these characters to look, how he wants them to be acting, how he wants them to stay situated, blocked, wherever. And so you are in complete control of the scene. Mm-hmm. And I guess, and again, now to relate this back to magic, we have the power of a comic book writer,
mm-hmm.
of to be able to go and block every single scene, relate every single character to us, the characters being the spectators, make them not into spectators, make them into integral parts of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll cast them, relate them to us, block them by putting them around us in certain ways, speaking to them, how we're dressed, how we're actually there. But I get the feeling that most performers, not most, should... A big, huge generalization like that is too terrible. But there are people who are only writing the regular prose. They stop at all this other amazing things they could be doing around them.
Around it, right.
They just are focused on this one thing and not doing what I think really, really good authors and comics do, which is casting the entire scene, making that vision, this artistic vision, their own artistic vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it should be. Like, everything you do should reflect exactly who you are as a performer, as an artist, and the way you're dressed, what you're handling, what you're doing, with the effects that you're doing, how you relate to the people, how the people relate to you, where you're standing, where they're standing. Everything around you should then become a complete whole to give, not to give people the idea that they saw a show, but to give them experience.
That's a big difference.
Give them the experience, make them want to think, wow, this was a great experience with this guy who I really want to be friends with.
Mm-hmm.
That's just good business, because who do you hire?
Friends.
You hire your friends.
Sure.
Right? And so that's how I've been able to make a living all this time, doing just with a deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to cast my little shows with the people around me, make them feel really, really great, that they saw an experience that they would never have gotten or never would have had any other way. And think, wow, I want to have that again. I'm going to hire this guy again, my new friend John. He's
right.
Great. I'm going to bring him back in. And I still have clients now, 20-some-odd years, my days at Disney, that still hire me to this day,
mm-hmm.
because of that.
Well, I think about Eric Mead, for an example. I've heard several stories, for an example, where that he is in a strolling environment for a corporate cocktail party or something. And there are other guys I've heard who have worked with him, and they feel like they're working their butts off doing one trick after another one. And he's over there kind of socializing. But he's more successful and popular because of what you just said. And I believe that is that he's engaging with the people. They're getting to know him as a friend and invite him in saying, would you show us something?
Yeah.
Big difference. I think that's great.
No. Oh, well, Mead's a genius, let's be honest. But
yeah.
But I'm saying it's like you want to connect with them on a human level first.
Correct.
And then do magic.
Well,
I think people are afraid, because one of the reasons why people get into magic is because they're afraid to socially interact anyway. Right?
True,
let's be honest.
Sure, no.
Right, me too, right? But they're afraid to engage on that personal level.
That's why they
first.
Walk up and say, hey, did you lose a knife? Is white knife? No, how about a red knife? Or whatever
Exactly. It's in the Darren Brown book, you know? And he says, now magic fell stillborn from the womb. As he says it right after the knife thing. And that's it. I mean, instantly engaging somebody by doing a magic trick, I don't think is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. And people can disagree with me on that. That's fine.
We'll get right back to our podcast. But first, I would like to introduce again owner and founder of ManageGigs.com, Mr. Chris Stoltz. Hi there, Chris.
Hi, Scott. It's good to be on.
I'm glad to have you back here again this week, and I would like to talk a bit today about the advanced features of ManageGigs.com. Over the last few weeks, we've told the listeners about some of the advantages and some of the features and how that it was developed and everything, but I know that you have some ideas for future development.
Oh, we've got big, big things that are coming out. So the new advanced account is coming out. And it's got, I call it 3.5 major features, just because the half feature is sort of integrated with another.
Mm-hmm.
So now it will do contracts. So it's got a contract builder. You can build and manage all of your contracts. It's got invoices in a big way, where you can save them and manage them and report on them. And then it's also got lead management. And then with that comes web forms as well. So you can pop a form on your website, goes right in, you can manage the lead, and then if the lead becomes a gig, you click one button and it creates your customer and your gig for you, and you're all set.
Wow, that's a great feature there.
Yeah, it's the heavy lifting stuff for, you know, those of us who are working a fair bit and need to automate a lot of those things.
That sounds like an opportunity that a lot of professionals should take advantage of. It's like having your own personal assistant.
Yeah, it'll do everything for you, and you know, we've tried to automate as much as possible so that you can just get in, do what you need to do, and get out and get back on stage.
And for right now, you are offering a 7-day free trial. So this way that you, this is a monthly fee type of thing. And if you go to the website, there is a little video that tells you more information about managed gigs. And you can learn everything that you need to know there. And of course, you can always just drop an email to Chris if you have a question. And how can they get in touch with you?
So you can find me at managedgigs.com, or you can just email me at chris@managedgigs.com and it will go right to me.
And that's Chris, C-H-R-I-S.
That's right.
Right. As opposed to like Chris Angel, C-R-I-S-S.
But so that's right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Chris. And so you guys, again, should go out and take advantage of this at managedgigs.com and take advantage particularly of the 7-day free trial. Give it a trial run. It's not going to cost you anything. You get to operate everything. You get the full program. Nothing is held back. So this way you get to see all of the benefits and everything that you can do with managedgigs.com so that you can do this anytime, anywhere, from any computer in the world. So thanks again, Chris.
Thanks, Scott.
And now back to our podcast with John Armstrong as he continues talking about how he engages with his audience.
But I think engaging.
Well, how do you engage when you walk up to a group?
I talk to them like human beings. Hey, my name is John. What's your name? Oh, great. So they don't know who I am.
Are you dressed similarly to them, or are you dressed a step above? You wear a name tag?
I don't wear a name tag. I'm always dressed, well, at least now, especially after my weight loss.
All new suits. How much do you lose, by the way?
I lost 70 pounds.
Mainly by not eating certain foods?
Mainly, I went on a paleo diet, though today I had ate a hamburger, which was bad.
And some fries.
And fries, which is also very non-paleo. Today was a very non-paleo day, but I'm sick. I don't care. But I went on a paleo diet, and I work out. I went to a nerd gym.
Good.
But people with gamified workouts with gamers and geeks and comic book people. And
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, we did CrossFit, essentially, with
that kind of encourages each person to show up all the time. You always need a workout buddy to kind of encourage you to go to the next workout, you know?
And I do. And I still work out when I'm on the road. I still do it.
So you got new suits. So how do you...
So anyway, I got these new suits. And so my suits are always just really nice, modern suits, but I always wear... a vest and a pocket watch chain.
Okay.
So I'm probably dressed up a little more than they are, but not. So they don't know exactly who I am, but I'm still.
They know you're not the maitre d'.
They know I'm not the maitre d'. They know I'm not working at the place as a busser or something.
So no wide lapels and the curly shirts and bow ties.
No, I couldn't like that. But modern, very crisp, very
right,
modern.
Right.
And so I go up and I talk to them, and I just talk to them. Like, he went, what's it going? Oh, I'm John. I'm a performer here. And I immediately explain to them I'm a performer right at the top.
Interesting. Okay.
And then bypass it as soon as I possibly can.
Really?
To talk to them more about them.
Well, don't they want to say, well, what does that mean you're a performer?
I'm waiting for them to ask me.
Oh, okay.
So I bypass it. So I basically say, I'm trying to, I'm performing here, but so, you know, Bob, because usually they're wearing name tags. Like,
yeah.
Bob, what do you do here? Okay. So I'm getting them to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually they're really like, well, what is, oh, you said you're a performer. What do you do? Oh, I'm a magician. I'm here. I'm going to show you something. Asked me what I'm doing, and I say, oh, I do magic. I can show you something.
How can you get around everybody? I mean, you know, whenever you're working in a large group, then I would think that would limit the number of people, because this is going to take at least 60 seconds at a minimum, 2 to 3 minutes, to kind of get into your first trick, as opposed to only having 5 minutes with each group.
If my goal was to get around to everybody...
It's quality, not quantity.
It's quality, not quantity.
Okay.
Okay. That's one. Two, I have a tendency to do sit-around magic, if that makes any sense. Which means that, like, I've grown up to a group, I've done what I've just done. I gather them. I then gather more people around after I'm doing some magic for them. I gather. And basically I end up doing like a show, like a 15-minute show for these people all gathered around me. And then I get up and I go to the next little place, do the same thing, build
a crowd.
Should
get more people in one, rather than just two or three standing
exactly.
in a cocktail.
I'm
okay.
not just constantly just
well,
going
that's
blah,
interesting.
Blah, blah. And the reason why is I want to be able to say, and I'm, this is advice I got from somewhere, I want people, when they look into the room, they see all these people huddled around me.
Yeah, and they wonder, what's going on over there?
That guy must be working, because all these people seem to be very engaged.
Good
to him.
Point.
And I think you get a lot more out of that than just performing for two people and they can't see you get blended into the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Remember Eugene Berger saying about how he'd done hat tears. So at the end of the day, after the show, they'd see a lot of people have all these hats. Well, I got around all those people. You
right,
know?
Exactly.
with that, so then you mainly do those types of close-up cocktail party type things?
Mainly. My life is so different these days. Like,
in what way?
Well, I mean...
You live in L.A.
I live in L.A.
You're the board of directors. Are you the chairman of the board?
No, I'm chairman of the board of trustees.
Trustees.
Yeah.
And how does that differ from the other?
The board of trustees is the advisory board about magic-related stuff.
for the Academy
of
Magical Arts.
Academy of Magical Arts, the Magic Castle. We're the board that advises things to the board of directors, the actual board that's the governing body of the Academy, about things related to magic, especially the awards. We're the board that gives out the AMA awards. We decide who actually gets them, mm-hmm. As far as the fellowships go, and then of course we run the Magician of the Year, mm-hmm. And along with the elections committee, we run the awards that are for the Close Magician of the Year, Stage Magician of the Year.
So you're going to go through and add up all the votes and everything and all the people?
Yeah, the elections committee does that, and then they report to us, yeah.
Okay, but then as far as the fellowships, those are things that you guys...
We decide.
Walter Blaney had gotten it last year here in Houston, exactly. Which is great. So you guys kind of make a decision.
We decided with Walter Blaney.
You have people who make recommendations to you?
People come to us with any recommendations they want. They usually just email them us in or just talk to us about it. And then
you might want to think about giving a fellowship to some magician who does podcasts. You know, might be an idea in the future to think about.
I will look into that.
Advisement.
I will take that into advisement, considering that I am now that's it. I'm no more. I'm 2 months from now. I am off the board. So,
who are you?
So tell you what, in 3 months I will definitely work on that for you. I'm very proud of how the awards have shaped out. We've done some. I think. There are people who I really felt needed to be recognized by the magic community, mm-hmm. Over the years. Then might have not have been recognized for any other reasons. Mm-hmm. One of those persons was Bob Fitch. I thought Bob Fitch was somebody who definitely deserved recognition for all the work he's done for my magicians.
Definitely.
Somebody I looked at very highly. Steve Forte, even though Steve Forte is a gambling expert, Steve's influence with his card slights.
I'm going to have Ron Conley on in a few weeks.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Wow. That's great stuff.
Yeah. We were talking for a long time just about trying to set a time to chat. And he said, I don't know that people really want to hear the kinds of stories, because this has to do like with gambling, casinos, and really not magic at all. I said, yes, they do.
Oh, no. You watch. I will be listening to that podcast. But I really felt that Steve Forte needed to be recognized, and he was. Mm-hmm. So there's people that we were able to bring in and get them to, I guess, get some recognition in ways they wouldn't have any other way before, which was nice. And I think our standard for the fellowships has grown in a very large way in the part of the people I work with, which, of course, is Max Maven and David Regal and Mark Wilson.
Those are the people who are on the board, trustees with you?
Yeah, Joan Lawton, Rob Zabrecki, Steve Valentine, complete slackers in magic.
No names.
Yeah, no names. And these are all people who really understand what it's like to create, to do magic, to perform, and have sort of a good pulse on their hand on the pulse of what's going on.
Worldwide. Yeah.
And which is great. So, it was an honor to work with them all, and then now
so I'm done with that. Is that an elected position?
I was elected.
And who elects? Is that all the body of the members of the Academy?
Elect the trustees.
Are there nominees that are placed before
People run. They basically just throw themselves into the ring. And then I've been voted on 4 times. This is my last term, which is 8. So each term is 2 years. This is my last term, so I've done 8.
You have 8 years. You can only... I mean, there's a term limit, is what I'm trying to say.
We have term limits now. We didn't used to, but we have term limits now. But I'm not terming out. I've just decided it's time for me to step down. And what was I saying? But yeah, and then the body itself that decides who's going to be the chairman. And so the former chairman was Mark Nelson, who was a Magic House host, a really, really great guy.
Right.
Mark taught me a lot about the awards and how to handle the awards. And when Mark passed away, which was epically tragic, honestly.
And now with Jim Patton having just passed, that was...
It's been a bad year, guys. It's been a bad year already. But they decided that it made sense for me to
move
to the position. So I did that, and I was happy to do it.
Yeah.
So, but now it's time to move on. Getting back to what I'm doing, you did a pie chart of all the stuff that I'm doing. It's all magic related, but it's different stuff. One of the things I'm doing is, I consult for theme parks. I do theme park consulting, through different companies, through Disney Imagineering, as well as this company called Bees Arc and Universal Creative.
And these are individual regional theme parks.
They're not. I mean, they're Disney. Disney's not a regional theme park.
Okay, I just don't know if you meant a lot of others, or just Disney in particular, or Flags.
I haven't done any. I've done some stuff. What I'm working on right now are these theme parks in Malaysia, which is strange. Mm-hmm. But I've done stuff. I worked out with Disney on the Mickey and the Magical Book Show, which was the show that's show that's in Hong Kong right now.
Okay. That's not on ice, is it, or anything?
It's not on ice. No, but that's a show that's actually in Hong Kong Disneyland right now. Mm-hmm. We did.
And there's magic that takes place in the course of the show, and so you've had some input on that.
So I worked on that. And
did Vito Lupo work? He used to be on the Imagineering team, I think, wasn't he?
He was working for Live Entertainment. He's working for Disney Live Entertainment. But Vito's genius. I mean, obviously, Steinmeier. You don't need to go to either me for anything that Jim can do or that Vito can do. That has nothing to do. I'm usually brought in on little, these little niche things. And then I got into, because of Adam Bezark, one of my third heroes, a guy who has created a lot of really amazing theme park attractions, he decided, you're smart, you're good, you can write too, so write this for me. And now I'm doing something that has nothing to do with magic. I'm just writing. Scripting out. I'm under very large NDAs to tell you I can't say whether they are.
That's non-disclosure agreements.
Yes. Very large NDAs with scary ones. But they said I'm scripting out attractions in one case for something that's actually kind of a beloved property. So it's really, really weird. And I got to work on some stuff for the Harry Potter theme parks, which was pretty amazing. Do that, and it's been really, really
cool.
And
then you were on, of course, Penn and Teller Foolish, and
I was. I did that. Yeah. So there's a performing side of things, and then there's also my directing, which I've been directing a lot of the performers, like David Lehman and Simon Cornell. And I work with them, and I
for their one man show, or for their David Lehman two man
shows, but
Simon's one man,
Simon's one man shows, and then I'm working with a bunch of other performers who basically have hired me to come in and direct their act.
Maybe have the wrong person, but it seems like it. I remember Simon telling me something about where that he had purchased a spotlight or something that was very expensive for his show, but it highlighted his hands or something in such a perfect way that he said it's one of the best. Some of the best advice he'd gotten to purchase thing and to use. Does it ring a bell to you?
Oh, no, exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
It is Simon, is that right?
Yeah, he ran totally, completely one of those things where he decided he was just going to do it and then beg for forgiveness later. He just ran the light, rigged the light in the close-up room.
Yeah.
Totally not telling anybody about it. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And he has this really amazing theatrical lighting to add to his close-up stuff. And he thinks like that, which is awesome. And he asked me to come in and work on his one-man show. And I do what I normally do, the shows, which is strip them down and then go through and say, this is terrible, you need to change this, terrible, 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 terrible. And we work on some really great things together. And it worked out really well. And there's a few of the performers that have now, again, hired me to come in
and direct
their shows.
You have a background in drama, or had?
I have. I went to high school for performing arts, and I went to the American Music and Dramatic Academy. I got kicked out, but
too creative, huh?
No, too drinky. Too drinky. One of the major regrets of my life is that I didn't finish that, and that's why to this day I don't really get drunk or drink because I regret that I didn't actually get a chance to finish that.
Interesting. And so with the castle, you moved from Florida to L.A. a long time ago. Yeah. Were you born in Florida then?
Born and raised in Orlando, yeah.
Okay. And then out in L.A., so kind of using that as a spring. Do you find that really to be a great hub? That is, that of course, obviously, you can go to Asia, I think, going west that way. But if you're going to be going east, to New York and work, do you find that you have more opportunities on the East Coast or West Coast or worldwide, or it doesn't make any difference where you live?
To me, it was just about, I worked...
I'm just wondering if there would be a better hub where you could be located physically to get to all these places.
Most of the things that I'm doing when I'm traveling, I don't think that really matters. I mean, Los Angeles is a huge, huge, gigantic airport that I can go pretty much anywhere. It's a hub on for a few airlines, Delta included, and so that doesn't really matter. But in living in Los Angeles has been a really, really good thing for me because of the castle, because of the contacts I've been able to make the theme park and film and TV industry and whatnot. But my plan to move out of LA was not about anything other than the fact that I thought I needed to get out of Orlando, or I was just going
to
be working in theme parks.
Why'd you go to
Vegas? Performers. Well, I needed to get out of Orlando, and Vegas was cheap to live in, and I felt at the time, everyone was moving to Vegas because they were giving out shows at the airport, right? Wasn't that what was happening, right?
Well, I wonder, because everybody seemed to migrate from Los Angeles. I mean, that was the hub, it seemed like, and then suddenly Vegas was it. So everybody
it's the opposite. I think a lot of people have moved out of Vegas because there's not a lot of magic work in Vegas.
Well,
itself,
and what it is cheap. I mean, that they...
People who live in Vegas, the magicians who live in Vegas do one of two things. They either travel, they're constantly on a cruise ship somewhere, or traveling, or working in some other location, or they're one of those guys that are magic marketer types. They're the ones who are creating magic stuff or working on magic-related projects for sales to magicians.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, actual, like, constant work, I mean, there's guys who have shows, right? But other than the shows that they're essentially four-walling and creating their own business, which is great. I'm not saying anything bad about
that. Sure.
But
only a handful of guys who are
able to do that, you know, and then that's it. I mean, there's not a lot of walk around gigs out there. There's not there's not a lot of gigs as far as like
every casino doesn't have like a walk around magician.
A lot of stuff that, you know, I know guys who are doing street magic out there. Chris Randall is street magic out there, but it's stuff that's going on. But I don't think it's that magic mecca that it was at one time. Everybody thought that it needed to be.
Do you think that the glory days was back whenever that the
Caesar's Magical Empire? I think it was the glory days. Caesar's Magical Empire was the final death. When that closed, I think that was the final death nail.
And everybody just kept hanging around saying, gee, what's next? And nothing came.
Yeah, and then you had so many performers out there, who were all going after the same gigs. And obviously that brings the market down.
Well, that's what I'd heard about L.A. so many years ago, for an example. They were saying, without naming names, but some of the better-known names were doing birthday parties for $100 or something and having to compete for that. And they said, well, this is ridiculous. So they went to Vegas. Now it's getting to be probably the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I'm exaggerating a little bit. You get my point.
I think if my public service announcement in relation to the magicians is that it's completely almost hypocritical of me to say, because I know I'm a member of these sites as well. I think the gig masters and the gig salary type things have done a big disservice.
Why do I do that?
For everybody. It turns most people into price shopping. I think what we really need to be doing is creating our own brands. I can price shop for a magician, but I can only get one Scott Wells. I live in the one Scott
Wells.
And
that's what you need to do to brand yourself. And that kind of goes back again to what we talked about earlier, John. That is where that you should find things that will fit your personality and things that will go good with you. And I think that a lot of times that when we go to a magic convention, you go to a magic dealer or see something online, you're going to purchase this because it's almost like point of purchase type of thing. And so at that point, you're just saying, I want to get that. That's great. And as opposed to going with a shopping list saying, I want to buy this, this, and this because I've seen this, or I wanted you to show me a demo of this because I think this will fit into my act. And actually making something that will contribute to your act rather than something that, well, there's nothing wrong with buying something just for the fun of it because you want to do it or show the guys the club or whatever. But I think that for the most part, going back to what you said, it just has to do by branding yourself with something that John Armstrong is different from Scott Wells, who is different from anybody else, you know, so they will hire you and not what I would call the Muzak magician, just kind of strolling in the background.
I'm a big fan of presenting yourself as your name and nothing else. I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of I say I'm amazing. I use words in my language that makes it very clear I'm a magician. But at the same time, it's John Armstrong. Period. I'm selling John Armstrong. So.
Well, I tell you, as we start to wrap up over here, that the name of my podcast, of course, is called The Magic Words. My question would be, what would be your phrase? What is your philosophy of life? What is your magic word?
What is my magic word? I don't know if I have a magic word.
Well, it could be a phrase. Something. What do you live by? What's important?
To this day, I still live by, don't have a fallback plan, which is something I talked about another podcast, but I don't have a fallback plan. If I have a goal, if I have something I'm going to do, I'm going to continue going for that
one
goal.
On that straight path.
And just keep going straight.
That sounds great.
And not having a fallback plan.
Good
plan
advice. Good. Thanks very much. And so for the magic word, that was John Armstrong, and this is Scotty out.
I want to again thank John Armstrong for being my guest on this week's podcast, and it contained a lot of great information, and I hope that you got as much out of it as I did. Let me also point out that one of the things that John had mentioned was the book called Understanding Comics, The Invisible Art. That really is a great book. I actually put a link on the blog that you can click on and get a free PDF copy of that book. So if you're listening to this through iTunes or wherever else, I encourage you to go to themagicwordpodcast.com where you can find that link and download your free copy. And as he said, this should be required reading for all magicians. I also think you may have noticed in the background we're playing a little bit different music than normal. Well, that's because we want to introduce a new contest that is beginning this week. Thanks to John Gaspard, who is not only a friend of the Magic Word, but also an author of the Eli Marks mystery novels, is giving away two free copies of the new Audible book, The Ambitious Card. That was his first of the series, and if you're not familiar with that, you need to go back and take a listen to the podcast that John Gaspard and I did. You can go back to the archives, just click on the new archives tab, which is over on the left-hand side of the podcast here on the Magic Word Podcast, and click on the archives. You can go down and find it, or through the blog here, there is a link that you can click on and listen to that. The important thing you must realize is, first of all, this contest is only open to those in the U.S., and second of all, you need to go to the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com, and at the bottom there will be a form that you can put your name and your email address and just submit that, and that's all there is to it. You're then entered into the contest, and we will draw two names that will be announced at a later date who will be the winners of the contest, and when a digitized Audible book of The Ambitious Card. I also want to thank someone who is a new friend of the Magic Word who has given a donation. That's Mr. Danny Cole. Thank you, Danny, very much for listening to the podcast and for your pledge of support to the Magic Word. I also want to thank Ian Rowland for the suggestion that has been long overdue, and that is to add the archives page. Again, if you go over to the side of the podcast, you'll see a link over there that'll say archives, and that way you can go back and look at anything that has been available on the Magic Word podcast since August of 2011. Yeah, we've been around for a while, and it's easy to do a search and find whatever you want to find on that page. Makes it very easy. Thanks again, Ian, for the excellent suggestion. Well, I want to also close out by giving a big thanks to ManageGigs.com, who has been our sponsor for these last 4 weeks. And I hope you have an opportunity to go down to the bottom of our blog and click on the 7-day free trial. Take a look and see if this is going to be right for you. But if you do any shows at all, I think the answer is yes. You need to check it out. And for a short time, he is offering a 7-day free trial for the listeners of themagicwordpodcast.com. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and engage all of your audiences as if they are friends. Because they are. This is Scotty out.